We have been studying God's laws on money and economics and making a comparison between the divine system and our own money system. Two points we have discussed is God's absolute forbiddance of the charging of interest on debts and the cancellation of debts every 7 years. To my new listeners, I must ask, please bear with me. I know any minister advocating interest-free money and cancellation of all unpaid debts at set times may sound strange to you. But perhaps the strangeness is not because the principles are wrong, but because you simply did not know that these were divine laws. Almost every American hears preaching during his lifetime. Many of you, if you listen to Christian radio broadcasts, hear hours and hours of preaching every week. But few of you ever hear a minister preach about money and debt because it is hardly ever done in modern America. Many ministers do not even know that God gave definite laws on money and debts. I am not going to repeat our study so far, but for new listeners, I will give chapter and verse. You can read them yourself, and then just stay tuned as we continue with other passages on the law and on prophecy. Interest on debts is forbidden in Exodus 22, verse 25, given at Mount Sinai with the Ten Commandments. In Leviticus 25, verse 35 through 37, in Deuteronomy 23, verse 19 and 20, where God says rather plainly that blessings of prosperity for the nation depend upon that nation not charging interest on money to the people. In Psalm 15, the psalmist asked, "Who will dwell in God's holy hill?" And the answer, "He that putteth not out his money to usury, nor taketh reward against the innocent." Jeremiah and Ezekiel both declared righteousness included not charging usury or interest on money. Ezekiel 18 states that a usurer is to be put to death and includes the usurer with the murderer for punishment. In my article on money in our February packet, I quote the words of the great German reformer Martin Luther, and Luther classed usury with murder in his teachings 500 years ago. In several places in the books of the prophets, chastisement and punishment were brought upon Israel by God because, quote, "Thou hast taken usury and increase, and thou hast greedily gained of thy neighbors by extortion." Ezekiel 22. We also saw that in Luke 19, Jesus Christ classified usury with thievery. He plainly labeled it stealing. On the law of cancellation of unpaid debts every 7 years, you can read that in Deuteronomy 15. It is also referred to in Leviticus 25, which is the chapter on the law of the Jubilee. We haven't discussed the law of Jubilee yet. God willing, we shall later. All right, back to God's laws on economics, on the subject of stable money. First, the general law, and then we'll read some of the specific statutes. The law was given at Mount Sinai, Exodus 20, verse 15, the eighth commandment, "Thou shalt not steal," and verse 17, the tenth commandment, "Thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house, thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's wife," and so on. These, of course, are the basic laws establishing the just right of property ownership, and the divine precept that taking property from another person is stealing and covetousness. Then some specific instructions were given at the same time. Exodus 21 covers such diverse areas as a man causing injury to another is to pay for his healing and time lost from work. A man causing a miscarriage is to pay the husband damages. Persons responsible for leaving pits uncovered or wild animals loose are to pay damages for people injured, and so on. Chapter 22 covers thieves who are to restore from double to five times the amount they stole, man's responsibility when he takes care of another person's property. Verse 20 and 22 orders the strangers, widows or fatherless children, are not to be afflicted or oppressed. Verse 25, interest is not to be charged on money. As we have seen, that is a form of stealing, and so on. And let's face it, many crimes are a form of stealing. Killing is stealing a man's life, or a woman's husband, or a child's father. Raping is stealing a woman's virginity and her honor. Bearing false witness or talebearing steals a man's reputation or results in other loss to him. Covetousness often leads to stealing, and on and on. So someone is ready to ask, what has all of that to do with stable money? Well, some people, especially you older folks, are finally realizing that inflating and deflating the purchasing power of money is a very effective method of stealing, without the thief having to risk using a gun to do it. One simple example of how inflation steals is that it has moved many people into higher income tax brackets. They have not gained purchasing power, but the government now takes a larger percentage of their earnings, stealing it, as it were, by deceit and fraud. And we'll discuss more of that later. I mentioned the year of Jubilee, or the law of Jubilee, and I will cover that later, but I think right now we should discuss some Bible passages on gold and silver, and also some history on gold, for there is much controversy among so-called economists as to the function of gold in relation to money, and the church seems to have no answer or advice. Many who will admit the evil of usury or interest on debt still insist that money should consist of valuable metal or at the very least be redeemable in silver or gold. History proves, however, that it is the stability and honesty of the government which gives value to its money, not some arbitrary amount of metal buried in some hole in the ground. The Bible has much to say about gold, and it is mostly bad. Israel's first transgression at Mount Sinai was in turning from God to make an idol of gold which they worshipped. In Deuteronomy 7 and verse 25, Israel was warned not to covet the gold and silver of the Canaanites, quote, lest thou be snared therein, for it is an abomination to the Lord thy God. In Deuteronomy 17, verse 17, the ruler of the nation was warned not to multiply to himself silver and gold. In Joshua 7, a man in Israel stole some Canaanite gold and a Babylonian garment and buried them under his tent. God considered it a sin so great, he allowed Israel's armies to be defeated by the Canaanites until Joshua searched out the camp and destroyed the gold and the man himself. I covered that episode in my series on Esau some months ago, so I'll not repeat it here, but that chapter is a condemnation of the economic system of Babylon, which was based on gold and usury. As many students of Bible prophecy know, the mystery Babylon of Revelation 17 and 18, that evil, anti-Christ, world-ruling power, counted gold the most precious commodity of trade, according to Revelation 18 and verse 12. So, if mystery Babylon covets and exalts gold, we Christians had better be careful about what we do with gold in a Christian republic such as America. In the books of the law, we find that there were such things as gold coins. In fact, Abraham purchased things with gold coins, but the main use for gold was in the vessels of the tabernacle and as inlays in the wood and other items of worship. There is no scriptural foundation for the use of gold as backing for money or debt. In fact, the Bible and secular history reveal that the most prosperous and happy kingdom of the pre-Christian era was that of wise King Solomon, And I wonder how many present-day economists know how Solomon handled gold. Well, the Bible tells us what Solomon did with gold and silver. In 2 Chronicles 1, we are told that God gave Solomon great wisdom. And we read in verse 15, that is 2 Chronicles 1, verse 15, you students of money and the Bible, write this down, quote, "And the king made silver and gold at Jerusalem as plenteous as stones." And the italics show the words "as plenteous" were not in the oldest text, so it should read that Solomon made silver and gold as stones. Not much value in stones, is there? Not many men, no matter how evil, would kill to obtain something that was considered as worthless as stones. In the chapters which follow, we find they used gold on chariots, on shields, and on all sorts of furnishings of the temple and the palace. Much of it was on items which could easily be stolen if the gold were of any value, which obviously it was not. In chapter 9, we see that silver was accounted of even less value. In verse 20, it tells us the drinking vessels were all of gold, that none were of silver because, quote, "it was not anything accounted of in the days of Solomon." Can you imagine that? The nation and the people were peaceful and prosperous above all other kingdoms, and yet silver and gold were accounted almost worthless. Is our economic system turned upside down? We have gold at the top. Solomon had it at the bottom. And we are not only losing our supposed prosperity, but we are in danger of losing what little peace we have. Between the Red Asiatics preparing war against us on the outside, and the Red Spies subverting us on the inside, and the Indians claiming our land and our water, and aliens coming in and occupying our houses and taking our jobs, perhaps it is time to look at the fundamental base of our system. Is it scriptural? Is it according to Bible law? What is wrong in America anyway? There are many other references to gold in the Bible, which make it obvious that no nation wishing to prosper and to be blessed of God dare place a high value on gold. In the vision of King Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel 2, the head of the succession of beast or antichrist empires was of gold. Since it is the head which controls any body, whether it is man or beast, God was showing us that gold would be the mechanism of rule in the Babylonian, Medo-Persian, Greek, and Roman succession of beast empires, just as Revelation 18:12 tells us that gold was the most precious item in Mystery Babylon. Today, the world places great hope and trust in gold and other precious metals such as silver. But God tells us through the prophet Isaiah of the end of this age. In chapter 2 and verse 12, God calls it the day of the Lord of hosts. And in verse 19, he says it is the day when God arises to shake terribly the earth. And what will men do with gold and silver in that day? Verse 20, Isaiah 2. In that day, a man shall cast his idols of silver and his idols of gold, which they made each one for himself to worship, to the moles and to the bats. It will be worthless. Ezekiel prophesies much the same. Ezekiel 7. God speaks of judgment upon Israel for disobedience, and we read in verse 17, "All hands shall be feeble, and all knees shall be weak as water." Putting it another way, a time of exceeding great fear. Verse 19, "They shall cast their silver in the streets, and their gold shall be removed." Or as the margin says, "their gold shall be uncleanness." Their gold shall be removed. Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of the Lord. And there is that phrase which identifies that as the last days, in the day of the wrath of the Lord. They shall not satisfy their souls, neither fill their bowels, because it is the stumbling block of their iniquity. And I think the margin translation on that last phrase is probably better. It says, they shall not satisfy their souls, neither fill their bowels, because their iniquity is their stumbling block. In other words, gold and silver will not even be able to buy food for them to fill their bowels, because their problem is sin. Their stumbling block is transgression of God's law, and God will see to it that gold and silver will be of no use in that day. There is much more in the Bible about gold, but that should be sufficient to prove that God looks with disfavor on those who trust in gold and silver for prosperity. I have studied the biblical use of gold, and I want to make it clear that Pastor Emery does not advocate gold-backed money or any sort of paper money redeemable in gold as a means of solving our economic dilemma. Our problem is not gold or lack of gold anyway. Our national problems are a direct consequence of our sin against God or the transgression of God's laws, especially in the realm of debt and interest. How about history? Does it have any lesson for us on gold? Although some of the banker propagandists try to fool us into thinking we either have gold or that we need gold, any rudimentary knowledge of history itself proves them wrong. From the 16th century to the 18th century, Spain hauled ships full of gold and silver from Central and South America to Spain, and was at the height of her military power. Her navy ruled the seas, and her future was considered so great that the Roman Pope himself divided the world into two parts and gave Spain the Western Hemisphere. But while that was being done, the English also came to the New World, and instead of finding gold, they found good soil and climate, and planted crops and built buildings and towns. By 1850, Spain had lost or sold her empire, and the English colonies, which had dug in the soil to plant seeds instead of digging for gold, had become the fastest-growing nation in wealth and power in the world. The final irony of the Golden Empire of Spain came in 1898, when the young nation of America, with her prosperity founded on agriculture and industry, swept the last of the Spanish fleet from the seas in Cuba and the Philippines. America took over the last Spanish colonies and tore the last Spanish possessions from their grasp. Gold and silver as wealth had been an illusion. Spain found temporary glory in it, but they did not see that food and the products that people need and enjoy came not from gold, but from God's blessings in crops, lands, and industry. If the Spanish kings had considered gold and silver as stones, as did wise King Solomon, Spain might have founded her colonies on the real riches of the earth, instead of the heathen metal called gold. A minor historical incident in America gives additional proof of the destructiveness of gold as the base for building civilizations. Captain John Smith of Jamestown wrote a history of the colony in its early years, and he told of how some of the men found gold in one of the local streams. The other men, imbued with the dream of easy riches, left their daily work to dig for gold. They neglected their crops, and that winter the colony starved, and many died. If help had not arrived in the spring, the colony would have been abandoned. The men found out almost too late, as some of our own people may find out in the day of the Lord's wrath, that you can't eat gold, and neither can you build a society upon it. The bankers, who controlled the supply of gold of the world, and foisted on the nations and on the people an illusory hope that they can stabilize the currency and the economy, have brought our Western civilization to the brink of disaster. As William Jennings Bryan charged over half a century ago, they were crucifying mankind on a cross of gold. That is enough about gold for now. I could spend hours on it, and sometime in the near future, God willing, our patriotic leaders will have to learn that gold is a curse. Gold is a destroyer, and that man must consider gold as does God, as the dust of the earth, and worthless. Americans must begin to see the true wealth God has so graciously placed at our disposal, His Book of Wisdom, His Rules for Civilization, His Laws in the Holy Bible, and the Gospel of Jesus Christ. For any radio listeners who might want to spend more time on the subject of gold in the Bible, some time ago I preached a series of 6 sermons in my church covering this fascinating subject from Genesis to Revelation. The title is, Should We Put Our Trust in Gold? That is a 4.5-hour Bible study and also a study of our economic system, and I can guarantee when you finish listening to it that you will know quite a bit about what God has to say about gold. Well, my time is gone for today. Next week, God willing, we are going to talk about stable money, yes? Money without deflation or inflation, and what God has to say about that. And we'll be talking about the Liberty Bell. I have heard one radio preacher making quite a fuss about that phony bell given to America by the Queen of England. He has been trying to get his radio audience all excited about getting the Bible verse put on that bell. But you don't worry about that one. That one is of no consequence at all. What that radio minister may not know is that a full-size replica of the original Liberty Bell is already in every state capital in America, 50 of them, and they have the Bible verse on them. Yes, it is already done. While men fume and fluster, trying to get things done, God has already accomplished it, and they don't even know it. Those 50 bells may have great prophetic significance. So you'll be with us in the next broadcast, if you can. Until next week when I return, God willing, this is Pastor Emery saying goodbye. God bless you. Read your Bibles and pray for Christian America.